She said, I'm Nicole, for those of you that don't know me. I am from Childersburg. I live here in Childersburg with my husband of 3 years, pretty much professionals by now. but I do have a wonderful husband. I've been a member of this church for about 18 years now. I realize in the program it says 16. I did do the program, but I can't add, so it's actually about 18. So a long time. This is my home here. This is my family. I love this church. We joined Grace, my family and I did, after we moved here from Washington State. That was quite a culture shock for a 7-year-old girl, to pick up everything we had, put it in the back of a U-Haul truck, which was a 3-seater, and there were 4 of us, so that was very interesting, too. We also had a cat and a goldfish in the back, so we brought everything to this new foreign place that we were coming to. But it was a trip I'll never forget. But it was also a 5-day trip, but we made it in 3, so I'm not sure how that happened. You know, my dad's like, we're getting there on time. If those of you who don't know my dad, he's crazy. But so you fast forward, right? You fast forward about 3 or 4 years, and you come to the most important chapter in my life. And that may sound kind of crazy because I'm about 10 or 11 at this point. But it is the most important chapter because it was when I was called to Christ. And that sounds crazy, and I used to be very... easy. Okay. It's powerful. I feel like Britney Spears up here. But it does sound crazy because I was 10 or 11 years old, and, you know, I would wonder how my testimony would sound to people. She was too young. She didn't have a clue what was going on in her life. You know, 10 years old, are you kidding? And I would hear these testimonies, and people would remember the moment, the moon phase, the minute. I mean, they would remember down to the second. I can't really remember if I was 10 or 11, to be quite honest with you. And that would intimidate me, but God reminded me that those little details don't matter. It doesn't matter what second it was, exact age. What matters was the commitment that I made at that age. What matters was the change that he made in my heart. And that was real. And that's all I needed to know that that was real for me. I remember being in that fellowship hall. It happened in this church. We were in junior church, and the teacher started talking about salvation, and there was really no question. I just knew I needed that. I needed God in my life. I didn't hesitate. I didn't doubt, and that's by the grace of God, because he started talking about it, and I was thinking, well, that's a no-brainer. I definitely need God in my life. You know, I need that. And, you know, I'd hear these... Another thing that would bother me about my testimony, I didn't really have that crazy of a story before I came to know Christ. At 10 years old, thankfully, I wasn't really into drugs or, you know, a hardcore life of sin. So I didn't have a huge dramatic turnaround. I did get a lot of spankings. So... Now, you know, and that still happened afterwards, so that didn't really change much. But most of that was from my attitude. I had a little attitude, and I used to kind of stretch the truth a little bit. But, you know, I still got spankings and beatings after that. But I don't know why God chose to call me at such a young age. I really don't. But I am so humbled and so grateful that he did. He had a reason for it. He has a reason for everything. But I don't need that crazy story before. I don't need the exact second that I remember him calling me. Because there's no doubt in my mind that it was real. Because it's still real to this day. And at 10 years old, I knew that I needed that because I knew I was just as much of a sinner as anybody else. I knew that I needed Christ because I didn't deserve Christ. I owe that foundation of knowledge to Christ to my parents, I believe, because I was raised in a Christian home. My parents were very devoted followers of Jesus Christ. And I think they built that foundation in us kids every single day. So I owe that to them. My parents made sure that we knew we needed to know Christ on our own. Not for them, not for anybody else, not for church, not for anybody, but who we needed Christ in our own personal way. And I knew that from the get-go because my parents taught me that. My raising was a little bit different. It's a little odd. We don't really fit the mold of a normal family, if you will. And most of you know that, and you know, you totally agree. But I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that we didn't fit the mold of a normal family. It made me who I am today. I wouldn't trade that for anything. My mom stayed at home with us growing up. She was a stay-at-home mom. A lot of people think that may be a privilege or a spoiled lifestyle, but she didn't really get that. Most of the ones I know, it's not really a spoiled lifestyle. It's more of a sacrifice that they make. And my mom sacrificed so much so that she could be right there with us growing up. She didn't really get me time. She didn't get breaks, or she didn't really have many adult conversations. You know, she didn't have time for that. She had meals to fix and laundry to do and a house to keep and forts to build and pirate makeup to do on our faces. So, you know, she had imaginary worlds to live in. You know, she didn't have her time. So it was a big sacrifice for her to do that. And a lot of people probably didn't think we had much because of that sacrifice. I mean, we were a family of four at the time on a one income. And to be honest, they were probably right. We really didn't have a lot of stuff. You know, we went without a lot of things, hot items that, you know, other kids would have and we wouldn't get it. But I promise you this, we didn't really know that we didn't have that stuff because that stuff didn't matter to my family. And so it didn't matter to us as kids. And so, you know, it was just different. You know, we just didn't know that we were missing stuff because we had each other. My parents actually decided to homeschool. It gets weirder. They decided to homeschool us. So took us out of public schools. And I was going into the fifth grade. I don't know if some of you may not know me. I'm a little bit of a drama queen. So when they decided to pull me out of public schools, I really thought my life was ending. I just thought it can't get any worse. We're already weird. And now I don't have a life because I don't have friends. It's just me and Christy all the time sitting there, you know, weird homeschoolers. So it was tragic. I threw my little tantrum, you know, but they didn't really pay attention to me. They never did about that stuff. But I'm glad they didn't because I'm so thankful that they did do that. You know, I thought my life was over, but really being at home with my parents, it gave them the opportunity to continue to build that foundation, to just continuously invest into our lives what really matters, you know, the real values of life. You know, before we went out into the real world, not after. So many times kids get, like Lori said, I teach a girls' Bible study, and the world is a scary place for young people. Man, I'm breathing hard. I didn't listen, Jimbo. Is that good down there? Yeah? Okay. You know, it's scary. It's so scary. So it's so important that that parents invest time in their kids when they're at home so that when they do get out there, they can withstand those temptations because they are so strong on young people today. It scares me. But we have a good group of young kids in this church that are strong, thankfully. But anyway, it would bother me because I would hear people say, you know, kids will be kids when they're talking about kids that were living in sin and not living their life for Christ and excusing it because they were kids. That's not biblical. So that's not accepted. You know, just because they're kids doesn't mean they don't have the same standards to live by in the Bible. But if their parents are not teaching them those standards, they don't know. And so that excuse was not accepted in my house for sure. We were kids, but we were expected to live by the same guidelines that they were expected to live by. And that's the biblical standard, you know. My parents were very strict. I will give them that. They were definitely strict. And a lot of people think, oh, those poor Baker girls, they can't do much. They don't get to get out much. They're so sheltered. They're so weird. And we were weird. Yeah, we were. But we were not sheltered. Definitely not sheltered. Don't feel sorry for us for that. At 12 or 13, my sister and I had our own jewelry business. We were going to change the world one stone at a time. So we had our own jewelry business. And then we had continuous free labor to our parents. And, you know, I always heard about those child labor laws, but that never benefited us. Nobody ever reported them. And I'm still upset about it because, I mean, we were construction workers. We ran the y'all remember the snow biz in Childersburg? That was us. We did the snow biz. We had snow biz. We'd cut grass in the middle of the heat of summer. And my dad was, I told you, he was weird. You didn't get to dress cute so the guys would look or anything, you know. We had long sleeves, pants, a respirator, and hats on. It was not cute. I don't know how I'm married. I really don't. But, and we'd be sweating. He said, that's your air conditioning. When the wind blows, you'll cool off. What? I don't think I'm cool. I'm hot. The list goes on. My dad embarked on we also put furniture together. We used to own a furniture store. My dad, I'm telling you, he went on so many different business adventures, you know. And we were right there behind him. And through all of that, though, it's crazy. And some people probably would think that's child labor laws, you know, that we need to call. But my dad and my mom, they were right there beside us working with us, and they were teaching us values and hard work that you need to survive in the world. You know, they were teaching us that, not somebody else. And through that, they built us into women, young women at the time, because my brother was not there right now. Young women at the time that would be able to survive in the real world when it got time. Another little fun fact about us, we had a variety of dwellings, I like to call them. We lived in the back of a furniture store, and that was interesting. But we did have swinging beds, so that made it all right. They hung from the ceiling, literally hung from the ceiling. We lived in some single wides, which is a trailer for those of you who don't know. I literally saw my dad build a trailer. If you didn't think you could get lower than a trailer, you can. Okay? My dad, I watched them lift the sides of the trailer. We were so excited. I was thinking, whoa, we get a single wide trailer. And my daddy built it. Then we almost lived in a boat. But we didn't, because my little brother came. And that was the best change of plans we ever had, because he is the best thing that's ever happened to our family. He has the biggest heart. I love that little kid. But he was a huge surprise. I was 12. I thought my mom was losing her mind when she found out. She'd cry. She'd stare. She'd just laugh. It's like, what is happening to me? We didn't know. Me and Grace were just excited. We got a little baby. But anyway, I love it. He's a great, great little brother. But you know, through all of that, I remember being important to my family. I remember knowing that I mattered to my parents. I was a very important piece of the family. And a lot of parents, I think that kids don't realize when they're not number one priority, when they don't have time for them, they don't think that kids care. They care. Kids want to feel needed. They want to feel important. You know, kids need that from their parents. My family would have these family discussions or family meetings. It was crazy and, you know, very official. But I remember we'd sit down and we'd discuss family decisions together as a family, all at the table. And as a kid, my opinion was asked for. And it was listened to. It wasn't just, oh, yeah, okay. I mean, they asked for it. They listened to it. They took it into consideration. And that gives you some confidence as a child. You know, my opinion matters to this family. I'm an important piece of the puzzle, as my dad used to call us. And I hated it at the time. I'd roll my eyes, you know, oh, I don't want to talk. This is so stupid. No, none of my other friends do this. But looking back, I'm thankful that they did, you know, because that's where I found who I was that importance that they placed on my life and my opinion and my thoughts and developing my own personality and my own way to think, you know, that my parents encouraged that. I think today society is so lost in families because everybody seems to like live their own individual lives within a family. You know, everybody's got their own thing going on. They're so busy that they don't do things together. Where's the togetherness of families? You know, we've lost that. I understand mine is a little extreme, okay, for togetherness. You couldn't go to Walmart to buy a gallon of milk by yourself. You'd say, I'm going to run to the store. All right, let's all load up and go to the store. Really? Do we all have to go? But we did. We did everything together. You know, I remember when we had a little scare with my eye and I was diagnosed with, they thought there was cancer in my eye and it turned out there was cancer, but we're going up to Philly just to get it checked out. We didn't know this at the time. Most people would probably, two people go, right? It's all the way to Philly, so that's kind of far away. My entire family, all five of us, we get in a little Jetta, we're driving. I don't know if y'all have ever seen a Jetta car, but they're tiny. So there's three of us in the back. And we're sitting like this, just for 18 hours, just driving. Oh, gosh, it was terrible. Well, we did everything together. And I know my family, it sounds crazy. We sound weird. And we probably are. But the word that really comes to my mind is foreign. I think the word foreign, because I think of 1 Peter 2:11. It says, dear friends, I warn you as temporary residents and foreigners to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very souls. We're supposed to be foreign. You know, we're supposed to stand out. We're supposed to be different. As Christians, we are supposed to be weird. You know, we're supposed to stand out from the crowd. And I'm thankful that my family instilled that in me growing up, to not want to go with the crowd or to fit in with the crowd, but to be different. And to do things differently, because as Christians, that's what we're called to do. When Carrie emailed me, I, of course, said yes, and I was excited about the opportunity. And then I was like, well, maybe you should have thought about what you were going to say before you said yes, because I don't really have a clue. But I knew God would lay it on my heart, and I prayed about it. And I kept thinking about the theme of today's conference, and I couldn't get away from that because I thought it was such a powerful theme. Seekers of your heart. God, I feel like really used this opportunity to get my attention, honestly. So I feel like y'all are having to listen to what he wanted to tell me. But I hope it encourages you and it convicts you the way it convicted me when I did this, when I studied for this. Because he really opened up my eyes to see how my priorities are so off balance in my life. But look, think about that, seekers of your heart. And I thought to myself, am I a seeker of God's heart? So first, let's look at we've already read these verses. Jeremiah 29:11 is what I want to read first, because this is one of my favorite verses, and it's right before our conference verse. And it says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope in a future. It's an awesome verse. It's been one of my favorites. And I know we've all heard it because it's really popular right now. And it is a great verse. But there's two verses after that that are so important that we understand before we can really cling on to this. Because things will happen in your life that you won't understand and you won't be able to look at and say, oh, this is to give me a good future. This is very hopeful. You won't be able to say that unless you get these two verses under control in your life. So let's go on to verse 12. It says, then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. Verse 13, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. The Hebrew word for seek in verse 13 means to seek, to find, to desire, to demand, or to require. That's a search with determination. That is not stopping until you get that end result. That is searching with all of your heart. That's what that seek means. I think about the word seek, and I think about us as women. What do we seek? What do we search for and desire? What do we chase after? What takes up our time and our thoughts? Is it God? You know, is it God that takes up all of our thoughts? Or is it our careers? Is it our personal success or money? Is it stuff? Is it fitting in? Is it acceptance by other people? What is it that we strive for on a daily basis? What is it that is our goal? Like, we're determined to get there. What is your goal? Of course, I think the very accepted church response to that question would be, of course God's my number one. Of course I put him before everything. We automatically can say that because we're pretty good. We've practiced it, right? But let's think again. 2 Corinthians 13:5 says, examine yourselves to see if your faith is genuine. Test yourselves. Surely you know that Jesus Christ is among you. If not, you have failed the test of genuine faith. So be honest with yourself for just a second, because God knows the truth, so you might as well just be honest with yourself. He knows who you seek or what you seek with all your heart. Let's really look deep into our souls. What is taking up? What are we obsessing over? It's so easy to get caught up in things of this world that don't really matter. It's all in vain. You know, we get caught up in things and successes that mean nothing in the end. To get swept up by expectations or statuses that we've got to reach because the world says we have to reach them. You know, the world says, oh, but if you don't do this, if you don't accomplish this, you're nobody, right? It's so easy to get caught up by that drive to keep up with everybody else. I want to read Matthew 6:24. It says, no one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. I know it says money specifically, but if you thought of something that controls your life more than God, replace it. Because that's what he's talking about. Anything that you serve or are focused on more than you are Christ, it's become your master. And you can't have two. You either have one and you're devoted to that one, and then you're going to hate the other. So things in our life can cause us to hate God, despise God. When you say it like that, it's like, well, no, I would never despise God. But when you're not seeking him with all your heart, what are you doing? You know? The greatest command in all the Bible is to love the Lord God with all of your heart. Matthew 26:36-38 says, they're asking Jesus, they said, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. So you see that phrase again, with all your heart. Must be kind of important. We see that there, and we see that in Jeremiah. So if Christ has called you to be his child, if you've been born again, if you claim to live for Christ, your number one focus should be loving him with everything that you have. That should be number one. Every day you should get up and choose Christ over everything. To love him over everything. That's the greatest command in all the Bible. Out of all the things he's asked us to do, that's what we need to focus on first. Nothing about your relationship with Christ or how you live for Christ should be described with anything less than all your heart. It's all throughout the Bible. With all your heart, with all your heart, with all your heart. Bible doesn't say, well, you can serve me if you feel like it, or, you know, if you're not tired, or your schedule's not too busy, or, you know, talk about me if it doesn't offend anybody, because that could get awkward. You don't want to do that. There's no scripture that says that. Christianity is either all or nothing. You are either hot or you're cold. God does not accept lukewarm Christianity. And I feel like that's what we're stuck in. I want to show this clip from The War Room. I watched it a few weekends ago, and man, that is a powerful movie. If you have not seen it, please go watch it. It challenged me on so many different levels. But I want to watch this clip, and because it's kind of talking about, she kind of puts it in a way better than I can, about being lukewarm for Christ. You can go ahead and play it.
Now, I ran a sales report from the area, wrote down a suggested asking price for the house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you say your husband did for a living?
Well, we actually haven't talked about that, but he's a sales rep for Brightwell Pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm. And where did you say you attended church?
Well, we occasionally attend Riverdale Community.
Mm-hmm. So you would say you know the Lord?
Yes, I would say I know the Lord. You think the Lord is okay with this asking price?
Mm-hmm. And you have children?
Miss Clara, my husband Tony and I have been married for 16 years. We have one daughter, her name is Danielle, and she's 10. She enjoys pop music and ice cream and jumping rope.
Oh, well, that's good to know. Now, you say you attend church occasionally. Is that because your pastor only preaches occasionally?
Miss Clara, I really would like to help you sell your house. That's why I'm here. As far as my faith is concerned, I believe in God, just like most people. He's very important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get our coffee. So if I asked you what your prayer life was like, would you say that it was hot or cold?
I don't know that I would say it's hot. I mean, we're like most people. We have full schedules. We work. But I would consider myself a spiritual person. I'm not hot, but I'm not cold either. Just, you know, somewhere in the middle.
Here you go. I've got cream or sugar if you need
it. Oh, no, thank you. I like it black. Miss Clara, you like your coffee room temperature?
No, baby, mine's hot. Elizabeth. People drink their coffee, hot or cold, but nobody likes it lukewarm, not even the Lord.
Point taken, Miss Clara. But why do you feel the need to examine my personal life?
Because I've been where you are, and you don't have to step on the same landmines that I did. That's a waste of time, and this asking price is just fine. Let me get you a hot cup of coffee. I was a little sneaky last time.
What landmines do you think I might step on?
You tell me.
I love that woman. I want to just carry her everywhere with me. Revelations 3:16 says, So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. That's scary. I hear people say, I'm a very spiritual person. I love the Lord just as much as anybody else. You hear people like that say that. We have enough spiritual people. We don't need any more. We don't need spiritual people. We need people that are on fire for Christ. God didn't call us to be a spiritual person. He called us to die to ourselves so that we would live for him. You know, that's what we need today. We need Christians that are wholehearted, self-sacrificing warriors for Christ. We need hot cups of coffee. We need that in the church today. Webster defines the word wholehearted, or with all your heart, like we've been talking about, marked by complete earnest commitment, free from all reserve or hesitation, completely and sincerely devoted, determined or enthusiastic. Does that describe how you seek Christ? With all your heart. How do we get that? How do we seek him like that? How do we break this mold of lukewarm Christianity that is just a disease that has taken over our churches? It is ruining the true image of following Christ. How do we stop it? First, I just have three more points and then I'll be done. First, you have to deny the flesh. Every day. That dirt that they kept picking up, it's because it's a daily choice. You can't just decide on Sundays when the preacher preached a great message that really moved you and you're on fire, and then you don't do anything the rest of the week. You have to get up and say, I'm not going to pick up that dirt again. I'm not going to chase those dreams that don't matter. I'm not going to seek things in my life that are not godly, that are not for a greater purpose, for God's purpose. You have to choose that every day. Luke 9:23. I know I'm giving a lot of verses, but verses are really good, so just hang in with me. Luke 9:23 says, and he was saying to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. All those distractions, all those things that don't matter, that take away our time with God, we have to deny them. We have to deny them that power. Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Nicole doesn't matter anymore. She died way long time ago. I live for Christ. Now, Nicole tries to creep up sometimes and take over again and become that second master. But I have to crucify that. I cannot live if I want to live for Christ. Number two, we have to devour the Word of God. We can't just come to church and sit on a pew and let somebody read the Word to us. It doesn't work that way. Because God has specific truths to your own life that if you're not reading it in your own time and reading what he wants to say to you, you'll never hear it. Preaching, we need it. We need it more than we get it. But you also need to devour it for yourselves. And we don't do that. We have it right here. God wrote us this entire book. And we have it on our phones, on our computers. I mean, we have it everywhere. You can listen to it. And we don't. Psalms 119, 10 through 11. And here's our phrase again. With my whole heart, I seek you. Let me not wander from your commandments. I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. We have to feast on his word so that we know what he expects of us. We have to know who God is by reading his word. This next verse, Matthew 22:29, Jesus is talking to the Sadducees, but so many times I feel like he could have said this to me. But Jesus answered them, you are wrong because you know neither the scriptures nor the power of God. If you don't know the scriptures, you don't know the power of God. And nobody can just read it to you. I'm so convicted of that, coming to church and hearing a good sermon and letting him do all the work and studying and then just me just taking all the little crumbs that he's put out for me. But if I don't get in the scripture, I don't know the power of God for myself. And number three, devote to God in prayer. And I'm not saying laying in your bed, dozing in and out, listing off all the things that you need, like a grocery list. How many times do we do that? All the time. And then, oh, I forgot where I was. Oh, okay. That's not the prayer I'm talking about. After that clip we just watched, we just watched a small part, but she goes and she shows the young woman her favorite room in her house, and it's a closet. And she calls it her war room because that's where she goes to war. She gets in that closet where nobody can see her, so there's no self-righteousness about it. Nobody can see how holy she is. It's just her and God. She gets in that closet and she prays her heart out with all of her heart. That's where she battles in life, in prayer. That's where she seeks God. When is the last time that I'm saying when you pray, you get down on your knees because you're in the presence of God and you're so unworthy. And you put your face on the ground because he loves you that much. When's the last time you prayed like that? And you meant it because he was your father and he died on a cross for you. If it would have just been you, he would have done it. And we can't even pray to him like that. He deserves so much more, and we can't give him 5 minutes of reverence and fear and praise. That's pitiful. I'm so convicted by that because we don't even deserve to be able to talk to him. We can talk to him all day long. And he listens. He says, "You will find me." We will find God when we do these things. We as the body of Christ, when we as women for the Lord get to that point, get to where we are denying the flesh, when we are devouring the word and we can't get enough of it because we love it, and we are getting on our face in prayer, we will do great things for God. And that's exciting, but not until then. We keep saying we want revival. My church, I feel like we're on the edge, we're on the edge. But if the people in the church don't get to that point where they're seeking him with all their heart, it's not going to happen. God says, "I know the plans I have for you. They're perfect." Sometimes we don't think they're perfect. But if you're not seeking him, if you don't have him before you get to those landmines, you'll get in so deep of a storm that you can't get out. So we have to seek him before we get there. Because one, he deserves it. And we should spend every day of our life trying to give back what he's given to us. When we start seeking Christ with all of our heart, we will be able to battle what Satan throws our way. You know, we will turn this world upside down for Christ. So I challenge you, as God has challenged me so much and convicted me, what are you living for? What takes up your time? What do you put all your thought and effort? What's so important to you? Is it God? Do you seek him with everything that you have and everything that you do and say? We got to make that step. We don't have the strength to do it, but God is begging us to do it. So he's going to help us do it if we were just take that step and ask him. So I pray that I will start seeking him with all my heart, and that you will start seeking him with all your heart. And God is going to reveal, I know he will, he will reveal so many things to you that you've never known. And you'll get closer to him than you've ever been. Thank you.